listening to The Green on Delaware Public Media, and I'm Abigail Lee. This week, I sat down with Andrew Sales, the co-founder and COO at Livestock Labs, to talk about factory-produced or cultivated meat and potential impacts on the agriculture industry. Can you talk a little bit about where Livestock Labs is right now in terms of their process or its process?
So Livestock Labs was born in May of 2023 by Dr. Uwe when he left his last company, New Age Eats. A few months after, he kind of recruited me away from my last company, Mission Barns, which is the first company in the world to receive regulatory approval for a cultivated pork product. We raised a little bit of money, about close to $500,000 over the course of 2024, allowed us really to get off the ground. So we got a few cell lines from a university partner for cow, pig, and sheep. And then soon after, we then moved to Wilmington. We're now in the midst of engineering those cell lines to give them all the characteristics that are necessary for cultivated meat. So growing meat from cells is not very straightforward. Cells were not meant to grow outside of the animal's body. And so you really need to have these cells be endowed with certain phenotypes or characteristics in order to grow millions of tons of meat at scale economically that deliver on flavor and nutrition. And so Livestock Labs, really what we're trying to bring to the industry is a stable, robust cell line that has all those characteristics.
Okay, so to put that into layman's terms, a cell line in meat production is essentially like the base. It would be like the broth in a soup. Is that accurate?
Think of like, you know, in today's world when we grow meat, you have the, you know, two animals that mate, have an offspring, and then, you know, eventually kind of offsprings come. A cell line is almost like that parent. You put these cells, you know, there's different ways to grow cells. There's different styles of bioreactors. Two of the big ones are kind of like adherent bioreactors, where these cells are, you know, on scaffolds, very similar to how cells might kind of grow on bones. And then there's stir tank reactors, where these cells are kind of floating around in giant bioreactors that you might see in like a brewery. You're putting a couple cells in here, and then over the course of 2 to 4 weeks, those cells are doubling up and filling up those bioreactors.
A bioreactor, in my head, I'm picturing like a sci-fi tank of some kind with tubes everywhere. What does that look like? What is a bioreactor?
It's really an engineered system that allows you to create something. So you could arguably say like a chicken is almost a biological bioreactor for an egg in its sense. So when you think of bioreactor, I think the easiest thing to think about is those giant steel tank, which you might find in breweries, like that is actually brewing our beer or anything fermented. And so it's really just a efficient system that mimics the conditions necessary for whatever you're growing. So one of the promises of cultivated meat is in some ways you're getting a cleaner meat because of this sterile environment from the bioreactor. Conventional meat, you know, when it goes through a slaughter facility, it gets mixed with intestines and feces. Well, with cultivated meat, because it's grown in this sterile bioreactor where you're only growing the critical tissue types that you want, muscle, fat, and connective tissue, is you don't have to cook out any pathogens because there are no pathogens. So you're really getting almost sashimi grade whatever meat you're developing.
Okay, so we have this option of a pathogen-free, I assume antibiotic-free as well, meat. What are the drawbacks? What's the goal here? Is it to replace traditional agriculture, traditional industrial agriculture? Is it to supplement it? And best case scenario, this, you know, type of meat blows up. What happens? What are the effects of it on the industry?
I think in the immediate term, it's going to take a while for cultivated meat to really make an impact compared to conventional meat. So it is supplemental to begin with. You know, right now, meat demand is expected to grow by 70% by 2050. And we simply do not have the land or the water or the planetary resources to really meet that demand as more nations are developing and wanting more meat. And so this is a way to absolutely supplement conventional meat. We're, you know, harvesting meat from an animal that's you know, not necessarily made to feed us. It's just something that we've kind of chosen. But now we could literally design whatever meat we want. We could create a bacon with omega-3 fatty acids instead of trans fat, which right now is known as a group one carcinogen, you know, up there with smoking cigarettes. So it's really to deliver a more superior product in a lot of ways. Right now we're, you know, mowing down the Amazon rainforest just to be able to monocrop more soy that then feeds animals so we could rewild more parts of this planet. We don't have to treat animals as poorly as we do right now. There are a lot of farmers doing it right. But in order to meet that demand, there's a lot more intensive factory farms coming up that we really don't have to do if we're growing meat in this manner, as in cultivated meat. The drawbacks are, you know, there's a lot of tradition in meat in every part of it. And so, you know, as times develop, this is very new. I think it's going to be difficult for, you know, people who grew up with conventional meat to make that change. So eventually I do think it will replace it, but only because it's a superior product.
One of the drawbacks with several people that I spoke to was just, I guess, an immediate kind of skepticism toward a meat that doesn't feel natural. Folks have this drawback, but, you know, we have some ethical conundrums in our current industrial agriculture system as well. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, how you would talk to someone, how you would approach someone who just doesn't trust the idea of getting their meat in this cultivated way?
It's unfortunate that people don't have that trust, but I think they should be skeptical. I think everybody should be more skeptical of where their food comes from, where their conventional meat comes from, where their conventional seafood comes from, where their vegetables come from. Everybody should ask those questions. Our current system, it's not very transparent. You don't know what cage-free chickens mean. You don't know what free-range chickens means. And you don't know what this new cultivated meat is all about. There's only a few companies that have been approved in the U.S. by the FDA and the USDA. And it is arguably one of the most heavily regulated food products. People should have questions and they should compare one to the other. And they shouldn't, I think, just think that, oh, it's conventional meat. We've been eating this for 10,000 years. It's fine. The conventional meat we're eating today is very different than the meat that was around 10,000 years ago. The chicken looks very different than what it did 50 years ago. So people should be curious. They should be concerned.
I'll just ask directly, is cultivated meat a more ethical choice moving forward?
Oh, that's a tough question. I'm extremely biased, so my one-word answer would be yes. There's a reason why nobody wants to know how the sausage is made and why that's even a saying. I think not allowing cultivated meat to be an option is unethical in the sense that we are running out of planetary resources, and it is, I think, our jobs as humans to kind of, you know, steward the planet in the best way for future generations. And I think knowing everything we do now about conventional meat and what it, you know, can do to the planet, especially if we continue to supply the demand that's coming, is just going to get, you know, worse and worse and worse. And this is an option to move forward. You know, it would be, I think, an equivalent, you know, ethical option if everyone just ate beans and went, you know, vegan and vegetarian. Unfortunately, that's never going to happen. But what you can do, and what I think humans always have done, is put something even better on the table. And I think that's really the promise of cultivated meat, is to put something even better on the table.
Something else that I wanted to touch on was sustainability in terms of land use. You know, I know one of the biggest conversations in talking about climate change is the amount of methane that goes into the air and the atmosphere because of cattle. Can you talk a little bit about how sustainable cultivated meat and cultivated meat production and factories could be compared to, you know, the more traditional route?
Yeah, based on the studies that are out there, it's something like, you know, 90% less greenhouse gases, 90% less land, and like 78% less water. And it's really because we're just hyper-focused in growing exactly what we need in a closed-looped system. So, you know, we don't need to grow the hooves, the beaks, the hair, the feathers, the supporting organs over the lifetime of an animal, which could be up to 2+ years in some cases. We're only growing exactly what we want. Maybe it's just the muscle, just the fat, just the connective tissue. And it is in this closed loop system. You don't need to mass produce, you know, and monocrop certain products that have, you know, a tough efficient, like food in versus food out efficiency rate. So for example, the cow that is, you know, farmed intensively requires about 15% of calories in feed input to give you 1 calorie of food in output. And the chicken, the most efficient animal in the world, is about 9 calories in of feed per 1 calorie out as food. Where cultivated meat at even some pilot scale tests is 3 calories in per 1 calorie out. So it's just that the planetary resources are much more minimal for something like cultivated meat, which is why some of the biggest companies in the world are interested in this. So, you know, JBS, Cargill, Tyson, Mitsubishi, these companies are investing in cultivated meat because they know that demand is continuing to rise and they just want to, you know, they want to offer the world protein.
Can you talk a little bit about where funding comes from for specifically Livestock Labs?
A lot of funding started with investments. So with venture capital investment, angel funding investment, and then a lot of government funding. So we've gotten a lot of government grants as well. The electric vehicle market is somewhere around like $300 billion in the last year. So huge difference in what government funding can do. And I'm optimistic that we are going to see this government funding as I look at cultivated meat and the race for the future of protein, similar to the next space race.
And finally, why Delaware? Why here? And then also, what does your company bring to Delaware?
Never thought I would come out to Delaware. North Carolina sprung up recently as a big hub. I thought that might be a chance from California. But really, it's a matter of chasing funding at an early stage in, you know, states that are going to be very supportive. So California, you know, there are a million startups trying to change the world. And so when I met, you know, some representatives from the innovation space, and they offered that they were doing this grant at a beautiful lab space, and they kind of convinced me everything Delaware had to offer, which was, you know, one, a very supportive local and state government, a great community that is big in biotech and life science, where there is talent, which is probably the number one thing we're looking for is as we scale, is there the talent in this area? And Delaware absolutely has that. And where can we, you know, make sure all of our money is really going into R&D and we're not, you know, putting in things we don't have to. In places like San Francisco, it's incredibly expensive just for the rent, to where, you know, you're not putting as much as you'd like into the actual research. And so here we just think we go a lot further. We have a very supportive community and we have the right talent surrounding us to really help build and grow Livestock Labs for the long term.
Thanks to Andrew Sales for joining us on The Green this week. Up next, Arts Playlist, where Delaware Public Media's Martin Matheny takes us to historic Odessa for a look at the immense varieties of an object almost all of us have at home, the humble and sometimes not so humble teapot. This is The Green on Delaware Public Media.